involving themselves with something that's materialistic, that is not only not real, but is also disconnecting you from the real real. A person would never do that. This is the point of these two chapters. So these two chapters explain to us, number one, the limit of human unity. So we can begin to have a glimpse of Hashem's unity. And once we understand Hashem's unity, then a person says, why would I ever do anything that is not going to be real, that is going to be actually disconnecting me from my own reality, let alone my creator, let alone my source of life, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this is, again, this all goes back to the previous chapters when we studied in chapters 18 and 19. We studied about the innate love meaning the natural, the love that we have for Hashem that's given to us by our parents, and they got it from their parents, and they got it from their parents, all the way back to Abraham and to Sarah and to Abraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, to our matriarchs or patriarchs, all the way back. So Alter Rebbe says, if you have this innate love, and this innate love, this natural love for Hashem causes you as a Jew, because that's the way you're born, it causes you not to want to disconnect in any way that's an apparent disconnection. Then the problem is that you don't understand enough of the connection to understand that even the smallest thing disconnects you. If you would only realize and recognize that, you would give as much self-sacrifice for the smallest thing as for the biggest thing, because what's the difference? If you're disconnecting from your energy, you're disconnecting. If everything is Hashem's energy, it doesn't matter anymore, big and small. There's no big, there's no small. There's only Hashem's energy. There's no big and small anymore. So this is an amazing, amazing perspective. And at the end of the day, this is what Hasidus is trying to teach us, the concept of the true concept of Echad, of one. The true concept of Echad, and this is, we'll talk about it a different time, why we use the term Echad, one, and not Yachid, which means the only one, the singular one. Another conversation, the fact that the struggle, and therefore the job, because our struggle is our purpose, the reason we're put into this world, the reason Hashem created us in this physical world, that does appear to us to be a separated world and separate from its source, and et cetera, is in order for us to struggle. And to struggle, not to struggle for the purpose of thrashing around in the water and struggling, but to struggle and to accomplish. So what is the ultimate accomplishment that Hashem wants from us? Hashem wants from us a very simple thing, that we should incorporate into our life, into the way we act, the realization that there is only one. And if we do that, then everything in our life is done only the way our Creator wants. And all of a sudden, we don't have a struggle anymore, because then our mind and our heart and our actions are all on the same page. When do you have a struggle? You have a struggle when you want one thing and you're doing something else. I want to lose weight, but I'm eating cookies and chocolate. I have a struggle. I want to be on vacation, but I'm at work. I have a struggle. I want to be this, but I'm doing that. I have a struggle. But if you're doing what you want, and what you want is what you're doing, all of a sudden you have harmony. All of a sudden you have peace. All of a sudden you have an amazing life. So Alter Rebbe says to us, get your head in the right place and you won't have a struggle anymore. And that's what the Alter Rebbe says in the beginning of Tanya. Look how easy it is. Yeah, it's easy if your head is in the right place. If your head is in the right place, then your heart is in the right place. Then your actions are in the right place. Everything is lined up. And then no more struggle. Then it's easy. Then everything is normal and natural. Now, having said that, that's the most difficult thing in the world, because clearly if it would be easier, everybody would be a tzaddik. We're not. Hashem doesn't make it easy. We're going to be talking in the later chapters and asking this exact question. If the point is that we should be aligned up in this. So why doesn't Hashem make it easy? Why is there this concept of the Beinoni, the person who has to struggle all their life? And that's another whole discussion. What is the advantage of the struggle? And why is it such that we are born in such a way that we are not given the ability to be a tzaddik, meaning to get rid of our yetzahara, our evil inclination, our temptations, and our things that are pulling us away all our life? The Alter Rebbe will explain to us at length the great advantage that Hashem, the pleasure that Hashem has from us, meaning 99.9% of humanity who are struggling and would never reach the level of tzaddik. We will be discussing this in further chapters. I'm just making the point to you that there is a buildup, and the concepts as we go through the chapters are all connected to each other. Like every good author, Alter Rebbe, it explains to us chapters that build and build and build all the concepts on each other. When we understand the previous chapters properly and correctly, the next chapters follow and ask it. The question asks itself, and then the Alter Rebbe explains it to us. So all the chapters are connected. So this is, let's go through a little bit of the beginning, and then we'll continue really next week, chapter 22. The nature of the divine order is not like a human being. When a man says something, we already did this, your breath is separate. The speech of Hashem is not separate. Nothing is outside of him. Therefore, Hashem's speech is not like our speech. Just as obviously Hashem's thoughts are not like our thoughts. And the reason in the shaded box is, it explains, if the divine speech is never separated, why is it called speech? The answer is because speech is communication. And speech has two characteristics. Number one, it tells you what the person was thinking. Number two, it becomes separated so that you can carry this thought and give it to somebody else who wasn't there when the person said it. The former characteristic is analogous to divine speech. In other words, Hashem's speech is called speech only to illustrate that it reveals that which Hashem was thinking. Just as man's speech reveals to his audience what the person was previously thinking, so too, the reason that this act of Hashem creating is called speech is because it means that Hashem took energy that was previously on a concealed level. The Ein Sof, Hashem's energy, was concealed. Hashem takes this energy and puts it into a package called which we call the world, the entire universe, from the spiritual world down to the physical world. And therefore, now there are angels, there are people, there are things. So it's called speech. That's an analogy. Again, it's a poetic way of saying taking something that was previously unknown and concealed and making that thing open and revealed to some additional entity. The audience is the created being, which from its own perspective is separate from God. We think we exist. We think that we are separate. These revelations of divine light and the life force that comprise the 10 divine utterances recorded in the Torah, meaning when Hashem created the world, Hashem said 10 different statements, beginning with Bereshis in the beginning, then let there be light, and then let there be this, let there be the earth sprout forth vegetation, and so on. When Hashem said these 10 different things, this is a poetic way that the Torah tells us that Hashem took his energy that was previously unknown and concealed and made it revealed. Likewise, all the other words of the Torah are also called speech. Even though they were not revealed for the purpose of creation, they don't create worlds because the worlds already were created, but they create other things. They represent divine revelation. They represent some energy that Hashem reveals to the Nevi'im, to the prophets. So when it says Hashem spoke to Moshe, or Hashem spoke to this prophet or that prophet, the prophet Yeshayo, Isaiah, or the prophet, whichever prophet, Yechezkel, whichever prophet, when it says Hashem spoke to a prophet, it means Hashem took his energy and made it accessible, revealed it to the prophet for the purpose of the prophet, then passing it on to the rest of the Jewish people, and allowing, therefore, us, the Jews, to be able, or the non-Jewish world, in the case of the seven Noahide laws, to access that energy by doing the things that that energy says you're supposed to do. So if the speech of Hashem says, V'ahavta et Hashem elokecha, you should love Hashem, and a person does meditate and says, you know, I love Hashem, my source of my life, you fulfill it. The divine speech says, put a mezuzah on your doorpost. What that is when we put the mezuzah on our doorpost, it allows us to access the energy that Hashem puts into that declaration. Every one of the mitzvahs that Hashem gives us is just another opening of a pipeline of energy, a wire full of electricity that Hashem allows us to access if we do this and this thing, whatever it is that Hashem asks from us. And that's why the Torah's, the declarations, the prophecies that the Nevi'im, that the various prophets had, are called speech. So, however, Hashem's speech and thought are united with him in absolute union, just like the speech and thought of man before he expresses them, while they're still in his wisdom and intellect. So, when a person is yet even before thought, yet even before conscious thought, you have some desire in your head, you haven't even formulated in your mind as a complete and a coherent thought. At that moment, the speech and thought is united in such a way that it's complete. It's the most, as we said, it's the most that we can imagine and understand on the human level of a person, of two physical things being united, or as they exist as a desire and a craving still in the heart before they rise from the heart to the brain with letters of thought. Again, because once you have letters of thought, it's not as united before. When you think about the action, we think about what you want and what you're thinking about, meditating, contemplating to do, the ultimate unity is before there are letters, while it's still a desire that has no letters. We would say in the deep subconscious, at that point, before one speaks or thinks, the letters of thought and speech will evolve. We're still in a potential state in the heart where they were absolutely unified with their source. What is the source? The wisdom and intellect in the brain, longing and desire in the heart, which ultimately come from the neshama, from the soul. Precisely so, Hashem's speech and thought are united with his essence, even after his speech has already become materialized. By us, as soon as our desire becomes crystallized and expressed in our mind in letters of thought, right away, it's no longer that united with our essence. That's not the way it is by Hashem. By Hashem, even after it comes out as actual speech, meaning as an actual thing that has been created, it is still as connected as it was by us humans before it came into letters of thought. So we'll stop with this. We still have a little bit to go, not too much. But I will repeat these concepts again next week in order to really become familiar and comfortable with them. And if somebody has anything they want to add or ask.
Yes, I have a question, Rabbi.
Yes.
So if a person lives like a real life, everything is connected, he sees through the reality and he understands, but then most of the people don't live real life for one of the reasons is because they're not supposed to or whatever. We're going to talk about it. But where do you find, when a person who lives real life, how do you find empathy and compassion for others when you understand why things are happening?
So this is an amazing question. And we're going to ask this question in chapter 32. We're going to come up to chapter 20 right now. When we come up to chapter 32, we will actually be discussing the relationship between the various classes of Jews, meaning the tzaddik, or even the person who is acting as a beinoni, so to speak, as a person who is acting 100%, 1,000% the way you're supposed to act, although they may still have the potential to have temptation or actual temptation at some level. So we will discuss this. And the answer, I will give you a little preview. The answer is that the true tzaddik, not only sees through their own relationship with Hashem, meaning they recognize that everything in their experience is Hashem's energy, right? But they also see through everybody else's stumbling in the dark. And they also recognize that every other Jew is really only a neshama, a soul, which at the end of the day is one with Hashem all the time.
Oh, okay, I understand that. But okay, so let's say, for example, in this lesson today, right? Like we're most likely not, none of us are tzaddiks. We do understand the concept though. So even like to ourselves, you also need to be compassionate and empathetic, because like, for example, today I've learned what you just explained, and then whatever is happening, I'll be like, okay, well then that's, you can beat yourself up over it, because you're like, well, I don't understand what, you know, I'm probably done something wrong, and that's why things are happening.
So I'm very happy.
Like, where do you pick yourself up and go forward?
I'm very happy you're asking the question, because as I mentioned to you, the chapters all build on each other, right? All the chapters build on each other.
Right.
So as we come up to the next chapters, let me see. You have to go a few more chapters. We're going to be talking about how does a person keep their head on straight when you, we'll be talking about this in 26, 27, 28. How does a person keep their head on straight? Why don't you get, you should get completely depressed every time you do the littlest thing wrong. And you think to yourself, oh, what did I do to my, Dr. Devin will explain all these things to us, how not to become depressed from your own lack, from your own inability to be, so to speak, acting the way you know you're supposed to be acting. And by the way, Dr. Devin will explain also how to be not depressed from any material lack, from spiritual lack, what to do. At the end of the day, life is still very, very complicated. But if you have your thinking correctly, you're able to wade through the complication, and you're able to figure it out. It doesn't mean it's easy. Listen, why do you think we have to daven three? The davening is three times a day. And not only is it three times a day, but in the morning we daven for like an hour if you really spend time davening. And the answer is because it is an exercise. It's like a person says, I want to lose weight. I want to have my heart in the right shape, but I don't want to do any exercise, or I want to have it happen in 5 minutes. It doesn't happen in 5 minutes. So it's very... It's not simple. The Altareva says it's simple because, yeah, if you exercise for an hour a day, it's very simple to be in shape, but you got to put that hour in. So anyway, all of these concepts, there is value in the study itself, even if you don't do anything of it, because you're getting immediate connection with your neshama, and that itself is an exercise. And the study of Torah is right away a gift, right away a spiritual shot in the arm, even before you put anything into it.